counsel. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Illinois against Andreas.
Every now and then when they really get stumped, they turn these kind of cases over to New Jersey.
Let's make violence super special.
Mr. Devine, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the issue presented by this case is whether law enforcement officials must obtain a search warrant after a controlled delivery has been made to respondent following a lawful custom search revealing marijuana within the container delivered. The essential facts are as follows. On February 21, 1979, a customs agent stationed at O'Hare International Airport inspected a shipment from Calcutta, India, to respondent consignee. He did this in a customs-bonded area. The container inspected was sheet metal, approximately 4 feet square and 12 to 18 inches thick. There were two locks affixed to the container, which the customs agent opened by keys which were accompanying the airline documents. Inside the container, he found a tabletop approximately 3 feet in diameter and 8 to 10 inches thick. He removed the table from the container and drilled several holes in it, removing from inside a substance which he field tested and found to be marijuana. He then contacted agents of the Drug Enforcement Administration. Soon thereafter, DEA agent Laybeck arrived at O'Hare Airport. He saw both the table and the container at the customs bonded area. He also performed his own field test on contents from the tabletop, which again showed marijuana. On February 22nd, the next day, DEA agent Laybeck picked up the container, which had been resealed at that time, from the customs area at O'Hare. He was dressed as a delivery man and took the table and the container to 61 East Goethe Street in Chicago, Illinois, the address of respondent given on the airline documents. There he met officers of the Chicago Police Department, including police officer Wayne Lepsek, who was also dressed as a delivery man. Agent Laybeck met an individual in the apartment building at that address who identified himself as respondent. The two walked outside and met Officer Lepsek. While they were unloading the container from the back of the van, respondent noted that there was a tabletop inside and that he had helped pack it. The three carried the container into the apartment building and took it to the second floor. Respondent directed the officers to leave the container in the hallway immediately outside his apartment. They did so. After leaving the container outside the apartment, they went around the corner and observed respondent take the container inside the apartment. While Officer Lepsek left to obtain a state search warrant, Agent Laybeck maintained surveillance within the apartment building. Soon after respondent took the container into the apartment, Agent Laybeck saw him come out of the apartment, go to a window in the hallway, look to the side and look down, turn and go back into the apartment. Approximately 30 to 45 minutes later, respondent came out of the apartment with the container. At that time, he was arrested. Agent Laybeck was present at the time of the arrest, and Agent Laybeck later testified that the container with respondent at that time was the same container that had been delivered to him. Officer Lepsek was radioed and told to return to the scene. He did so, and Officer Lepsek and Agent Laybeck accompanied the container to Chicago Police Headquarters. At Chicago Police Headquarters, the container was opened, A tabletop was found within. The substance was removed from within the tabletop and again field tested and found to be marijuana. Officer Lipsek was present during this entire process and testified that the container which was opened was the same container that had been delivered to respondent. Respondent was charged with possession of controlled substances and with possession of controlled substance with intent to deliver. The trial court granted respondent's motion to suppress evidence. The Illinois Appellate Court affirmed that decision. The state's petition for leave to appeal to the Illinois Supreme Court was denied, and this court granted certiorari. It is the state's position that no warrant was required for the second opening of the container at police headquarters. There had been a lawful customs search which clearly established that contraband was within the container, and this knowledge was within law enforcement's area of understanding. There was then a controlled delivery of the container and its contents, during which the officers maintained reasonably continuous surveillance. Thus, the second search constituted not a new search, but a reassertion of control over that which government had already seized. This court has, for many years and in many cases, held that a search at customs is reasonable by the fact that it occurs at the border. It does not require probable cause. It does not require a warrant. Thus, any individual shipping a container which will cross a border has no legitimate expectation of privacy. That container will not be searched. At the time that the search took place here at customs, it was performed by a customs agent. It was performed in a customs area. It revealed contents which were contraband, and field tests confirmed that it was contraband. At that stage, government had the right to seize the container and its contents. They also had the right to conduct a controlled delivery, which they did. A controlled delivery is an accepted police activity where there is delivery by law enforcement and there is a serving of a legitimate law enforcement purpose. In this case, two purposes could be to confirm the identity of the recipient of the container and also to identify any Confederates which might be involved in the criminal enterprise. Thus, the seizure had taken place at the time of the initial legal search and remained in government's constructive control throughout. Here, there was a valid controlled delivery. Markings were not necessary on this container because it was of a distinctive type. It was a 4x4 metal container used to ship large objects. Therefore, it was sufficiently distinctive that no special markings on the outside or in the interior were necessary. The law enforcement agencies involved had collective knowledge that was sufficient through the continuum of delivery here so that there was no break. All relevant actions taken from the time of the search at customs were by customs agents, Chicago Police Department officers, or agents of the Drug Enforcement Administration. The critical point here is the 30 to 45 minute interval during which respondent had the container in his apartment. It is our position that this did not create any legitimate expectation of privacy on the part of respondent in the contents of the container. The fact of possession clearly does not defeat a controlled delivery because it takes place in almost every controlled delivery. At least for some point, the individual recipient does have the package. Constant observation of the package and the recipient are not required in a controlled delivery. Quite frequently during this process, there is transfer from one agent to another, law enforcement agency to another, via common carrier. It is not required, and it has never been required in these cases, that there be continuous government observation of the object while it is being transferred.
In this case, would your analysis be any different had it been a small suitcase?
I think, Your Honor, the situation might be different if you had a common suitcase which could not be clearly identified and which would allow readily easy transfer of the contents. We submit, however, that when you have a container which is clearly identified and there is reasonably continuous surveillance by law enforcement officials. With that knowledge, and then a retaking after a relatively short interval, that the second taking is merely a reassertion of control.
So in this case, much depends on the facts, then.
I think, Your Honor, that the court could, because of the unusual nature of the type of search which can occur at customs under the law and which can give law enforcement officials specific knowledge of the contents of a container, could take the position that once government finds contraband in such containers and the container is identified, even if it were a suitcase, if it were clearly identifiable, then government, if it maintained reasonably continuous surveillance, could retake that container and open it up, because there had been that specific knowledge and there had not been a legitimate expectation of privacy about the contents in placing it at an international border.
That would be true, following up on Justice Blackmun's question, only so long as there were probable cause to believe that whatever had been in the container was still in it. If it had been in the guy's apartment for 2 days and he comes out with a container, he may just be throwing it in the trash.
I think that the time factor, Justice Rehnquist, plus the type of container are items to consider. But I think the basic standard which the court could look at is one that is premised on the actual knowledge at customs. Of course, if it were a container that could easily be changed and were in the specific control of respondent for a long period of time, that those are considerations which the court would have to apply to the case.
Counsel, for while you interrupted, you said the keys were along with the shipment papers.
That's correct, Justice Marshall.
I'm sorry, I don't understand that.
At the time, the shipment was made from Calcutta, India, to Chicago via Lufthansa Airlines. The Lufthansa documents for the shipment included the keys to open the container.
For anybody to open it?
Presumably for customs to open it, Your Honor.
I see.
Here both Chadwick and Sanders, which were cases cited by the Illinois Appellate Court in ruling on this matter, both noted that a reasonable expectation of privacy relates to what is known about the container. Chadwick specifically refers to the fact that the container itself is known to the public and can be seen by the public. Here, law enforcement had seen the contents of the container. In the Sanders decision, it was noted that certain types of containers, such as gun cases, do not create a reasonable expectation of privacy because of their nature. If that is true with a gun case where the contents are not known, it is certainly true of a situation such as this, where law enforcement has, with validity, gone into the container in a reasonable way and determined what the contents are.
Mr. Devine, can I ask you a question? There's a question, I guess, that Justice Rehnquist focused on is, you said it had to be at least probable cause. How would you frame the standard of the degree of certainty that there hasn't been a changing in the contents of the containers? Here you've got 30 minutes to deal with, and that's the problem, I guess, according to the appellate court had, was the interval.
I certainly think, pardon me, Your Honor, I certainly think in this case, if one applied just about any reasonable test, such as the substantial likelihood test suggested by the Solicitor General.
Do you endorse that test?
I think it is a narrow but proper holding in this case, Your Honor. And I think if applied to this case, with the type of container you have, with a table inside it, and inside of the table, hardly easily accessible, you find the contraband. And if you couple that with the suspicious behavior of respondent in going to the window, looking out, making a coast is clear look, and then coming out with the container, coupling all those items together, plus the fact that the police, after seizing the container, could tell whether it weighed relatively the same. I think all those things clearly suggest here that there is very little likelihood.
I understand that, but their test, and I guess you're willing to endorse, is quite different from merely a probable cause test. It's a higher standard, and you say on these facts you meet it, which
we think we meet that test.
But
yes,
you're not arguing for a probable cause standard, is what I'm really trying to find out.
Well, I would argue for more, Mr. Justice Stevens, yes. I would suggest that where you have a situation of actual knowledge by law enforcement, finding contraband.
Once you have actual knowledge, that then all you need at any time after that is probable cause to believe there hasn't been a change in the contents.
If the container is identified,
right,
either because it's distinctive, because it's marked, or because a beeper, for example, might be placed in it. Yes. If law enforcement at that point has nothing affirmative presented to them to take away their legitimate expectation that that container still has contraband within, we think it can be searched without a warrant.
I think you responded to one question by saying that if it were, there had been a lapse of 2 or 3 days, that would make it quite a different case. From that, is it correct to assume that you're saying that the observation of the officers plus the short lapse of time was sufficient to give them probable cause to believe that the container was in the same condition and had the same contents when it came out of the apartment as when it went in? Is that your argument?
I think, essentially, Chief Justice Berger, it would amount to that, but I would phrase it in the sense there is nothing that happened that took away from their actual knowledge because of the reasonably continuous surveillance, the type of container, and the amount of time that was involved here. Having had actual knowledge, it was certainly legitimate for them, after this container came out, with all the facts that I've described, for law enforcement to seize the container and to search it without a warrant.
Well, certainly if it had been a cardboard carton, for example, and a half an hour had elapsed, it would be pretty easy, if it were not within the officer's view, to change the contents of the container, would it not?
I think the ease of ability to change the contents, Justice O'Connor, is a factor to consider, and it is one of the things that I would suggest could be brought forward as an affirmative statement by defendant or respondent to show that there were reasonable factors that law enforcement people could be aware of to change their understanding of what might be in that container. However, if there were a beeper inside the cardboard box, that might create a different situation. I think this kind of case does require an examination of all the circumstances that are involved, but I think the standard I suggested provides a basis for looking at those various factors.
Was the container here one to which items could have been added within the half hour or so? Perhaps not possible to take out all of the contents of
right.
the table, but could other items have been added?
I would expect that based on the size of the container and the size of the table, it might have been possible to put something in, but at the same time, I would, looking at the type of container, not expect that someone would readily use that as a piece of hand luggage. It is obviously designed for shipping large items, and based on the circumstances of this case, I think it is highly remote that anything was done that would have been a transfer of a large item for contraband or something other than that inside that container, and then have it come out and be approximately the same weight it was when it went in.
How much did they get out of the table?
The street value estimate by the Chicago police officer on the scene was $100,000.
What was the weight?
The weight does not show up on any of the common law record at this stage, Your Honor. It is still being held.
Was it the same material?
Yes. Hashish.
Was a drill required to get to the inside of the table?
It is my understanding from the record, Justice Powell, that a drill was used by the customs agent, probably on the underneath side of the table, to open up holes first to determine if it was hollow and then to remove an amount of substance that could be field tested.
Was any drill found in respondent's apartment?
There is no evidence in the record that anything such as a drill was found with the container.
Wasn't the table, was it openable in some other way besides a drill?
Well,
do you know?
We don't know from the record, Justice White.
What authority did they have to drill into my furniture?
When you're bringing it in customs, they can take it apart and make a French Connection search, can't they?
It is our understanding from Ramsey and other cases that go back to Boyd, Justice Marshall, that...
Can you give me any better authoritative answer than a moving picture?
than a... Oh, I didn't give you that authority, Justice Marshall. I think the case law...
Where do you get the... Customs just has that broader authority, right?
There may be...
Is that your position?
Certainly this court commented in Ramsey in a footnote that allowing the customs agent to inspect, in effect, any baggage, any person that comes across the international border does not...
But this is drilling in.
Yes, and then replugging the holes by the customs agent after the drilling took place. But the case is quite clear that customs can inspect a tabletop or anything that comes through to determine if, in fact, as here, there is contraband inside.
My question is, what case or what other authority do you have to drill into a piece of furniture?
Well, I think that I would cite to Ramsey, which this court has made, the decision which this court has made. I would cite to Section 1582 of the U.S. statutes, the U.S. Code, and the regulations adopted thereunder. They don't specifically say you can drill inside, but they do give customs the clear power to search any baggage and any person that comes in. Now, that has to be done reasonably, I would suggest, and that to just bash open any piece of baggage that came through, as this court perhaps noted in Ramsey, is not something which the court has approved. But this was done reasonably. Drills were used, which customs agent apparently frequently used. The table was plugged up again. Presumably it was done on the underside so it would not damage the table. And in fact, if you did not do that, if you did not have the authority to do that, anytime someone wanted to be sure they could smuggle something into the country, they would put it inside something like a tabletop. So I think it is historically and under the case law quite well established that customs can do what is necessary to make a reasonable inspection. We are not arguing here for a controlled delivery exception to the warrant requirement. Rather, we are arguing that the customs exception quite clearly applies here, and that after that inspection at customs had revealed contraband within the tabletop and it was placed back in the container, law enforcement could carry out a controlled delivery of that container, and by maintaining reasonably continuous surveillance and under all the circumstances that have been described here, allow for a second search, which is not a new search, but rather a reassertion of control by government. This court has, in other contexts, such as Edwards and Tyler, noted that constant possession, constant visual surveillance of an area searched is not necessary in order to retain the custody that is sufficient to allow government to go in. Specifically in Tyler, this court noted that a second search several hours later of an arson scene constituted a continuation of the fire personnel's activity on the scene, and that it was not a new search and not subject to a warrant requirement.
But in that case, the individual search was still on the premises.
The firemen had left the scene, Chief Justice Berger, and came back some 4 hours later after the smoke and steam had cleared away, made one search, went away again, and came back an hour later. And the court held that the early morning searches several hours later were a continuation of the first search.
Why are you arguing an extended border search rather than a controlled delivery? I don't understand.
That argument, Justice O'Connor, was made by the Solicitor General, and while we certainly believe we could withstand analysis under an extended border search theory, Illinois is basically arguing the customs exception plus the controlled delivery. We think the difference here is there was an actual search at the border, whereas in the extended border search cases, there has not been, and you are setting forth...
You are arguing the controlled delivery.
That we are not arguing a controlled delivery exception, Your Honor. We are arguing a customs exception plus a legitimate controlled delivery.
But I suppose analytically one might have a controlled delivery in connection with some other valid search that wasn't based on customs.
I think that's certainly correct, Justice Rehnquist. In fact, I think the most common way they occur is if a common carrier has, for some reason, had cause to inspect an item coming aboard a train or a plane, and the police officials see it in plain view. That seems to be, number-wise, the most common way that this happens. Here, the search at the police headquarters was not an incremental intrusion into an area of privacy concerning which respondent had legitimate expectations. When one is balancing that lack of intrusion, lack of any further intrusion beyond what had already been searched, against the burden which would be placed on law enforcement by requiring that a warrant be obtained, the balance clearly is in the favor of law enforcement. We would therefore pray that this court reverse the judgment of the Illinois Appellate Court and remand this matter to the Circuit Court of Cook County for further proceedings. Thank you.
Mr. Reardon.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the petitioners have reiterated today that the facts of this case show what they've called a controlled delivery, and I agree with some of the questions and with the petitioner when he said this case is controlled by the facts. I think the facts in this case do not show that a controlled delivery occurred, regardless of whether we accept the reasoning of the controlled delivery as an exception to needing a warrant. The facts that we look to that position are the following.
What do you understand? At some point, will you give your definition of what you think a controlled delivery is?
Well, I think they have based, and I think the Illinois Appellate Court based its understanding of a controlled delivery upon the cases in the various courts of appeals, such as Berry.
What I was driving at is, when you use the term, what do you mean by it? Not what the courts meant.
I think that a controlled delivery, if there is one, must entail a constant, close surveillance and control over the contents that are to be seized at whatever time they are eventually seized and taken into police control.
How do you keep control of the contents? How do you observe the contents when they're sealed?
Well, I think
that
over the years the cases have given us imaginative ways that the government has found to do that. One is that when a package is found, the government, either by virtue of plain view doctrine or custom search or whatever, sees the contents of a container. They then mark that container in such a way so that at a later time, when they have delivered the container into someone else's possession and watched it closely, as all the courts have demanded, they can then tell whether that container is open, has been opened or closed, therefore whether the contents of that container are the same.
What problem, if any, do you have with the fact that they also had their keys?
Well, at the time of the customs search, apparently the keys were attached by Lufthansa as a part of the shipment and were with the tin package, so that when it came to customs, all the customs agent had to do was to take the keys and open the package.
Did the government keep the keys?
Well, there's no evidence as to even whether the container at the time it was delivered was in fact locked. All it said is the container was closed and opaque at the time it was delivered. I suggest to the court that on the issue of bringing the container from the customs depot to the address on Goethe Street, that there are several occasions when we have problems with the analysis of the facts that has gone before. For example,
Mr. Reardon, would you want us to draw a bright line where there is any period of time whatsoever when the package is out of eyesight of the authorities?
Well, I think you're asking me to go beyond the facts in this case, which I think give us an opportunity to clearly see a line.
Well, at least that would be an easy approach. A bright line is drawn and easy to be enforced that way.
Well, possibly that would be the way this court could go. But in this case, there is such a bright line that I don't think there's any problem with drawing it.
45 minutes?
There's at least a half hour to 45 minutes where the container is not just handed to someone, where, and then that someone, as in many cases, walks out of the airport with agents trailing him and following him by radio, the container is handed to him at the door of his own home, an apartment, but nevertheless a home, a Fourth Amendment protected area. He went inside that home with a closed container and closed the door. And at that moment, I think that he manifested an expectation of privacy that is protected by the Fourth Amendment. And during an interim of a half an hour, there was no evidence in this case that there was any particular problem emptying out that container. I take exception to the statements of the petitioner on that score. There was no information given to us that there was any difficulty in opening this ordinary shipping container that Lufthansa uses to ship furniture and to take out the table. There was no evidence at any time as to the fact that this is a heavy object or a difficult object to move. That is not in the record. In fact, if we are to look to the record for anything at all, it is a statement given to us by Agent Laybeck that he says the respondent gave him. And that is, oh, it's not heavy, I'll take it myself. I packed it myself before. Now, so that's what Agent Laybeck tells us.
He may open it up and empty it up, but then he had to fill it up again.
There's no evidence that it was even full at the time it was seized, other than that it was, of course, later opened.
Well, it was later, but when it was taken, when it was searched at the police station, it certainly had something in it.
Oh, it certainly did. But at
and
the time of
and
arrest...
And there's no indication, and if there was something in it, it was either put in it in his apartment or before.
But at the time that is relevant to the seizure and to the opening of that container, no evidence has been given to us that police weighed it, checked the weight against any earlier time when it was the same.
We're talking about its probable cause. We're not talking about, I would think, the kind of chain of possession that you have for a chemist to testify at the trial. But this is strictly probable cause.
Well, first of all, if we
more
are...
More likely than not is the standard, is it not? More likely than not, as distinguished from beyond a reasonable doubt?
Well, if we are talking about probable cause, obviously the standard is less than reasonable doubt. But I suggest to you that under the cases that the Illinois Appellate Court relied on and that I believe apply to this situation, both U.S. v. Chadwick and Arkansas versus Sanders, the doctrine there is that probable cause does not excuse the warrant requirement.
I got an impression that you suggested that when this man took the container out of the hall and took it into the apartment, then it achieved some new changed status or cloak of privacy.
I suggest that...
Is that your position?
I do say that, yes.
Well,
and I say that because that has been an attack made by the petitioners, that for some reason there can be no objective expectation of privacy in a package, in a container, once it has gone through customs. Apparently, petitioners feel that an objective expectation lies upon the package rather than on the possessor or recipient, and that there's some sort of halo that surrounds a suitcase or container. Once it goes through customs, that halo is erased, and forevermore, that container can never be an object of privacy again.
Well, I think their argument is that you lose the expectation of privacy so long as there's some surveillance of it thereafter until the point that it's seized. That's how I understand the argument. And the tough part of this case is that break in time and the level of certainty that's required to be sure something hasn't been taken out or added.
Well, I agree with that.
What level of certainty do you think the cases show has to be applied?
Well, Justice O'Connor, once that door closes to a private Fourth Amendment area, that is why I responded as I did to Chief Justice Berger.
Would you think if the door were closed for 30 seconds that would somehow magically change this case?
Well, let's assume that you're making me do things that are not in the case, and that I find difficult because then I would be in a different position, of course.
That's the fun we have in asking questions.
That's what we're here for, to test your arguments with hypothetical questions.
But, counsel, when you get a package from overseas and you are a average intelligent person, don't you assume that someplace along the line the customs agents have taken a look at it?
Well, I think it would be a reasonable assumption, yes. Yes.
Well, how do you escape it here?
Well, let us assume.
As of right now, with what your associate tells me, I have to also assume that somebody drilled into my furniture.
Well, we specifically.
Don't you have to assume that?
Both at the trial level and the appellate level and in our briefs in this court, we have specifically prescinded from any discussion of whether or not the customs search was a lawful search by a governmental agency. We have conceded for purposes of argument that it was.
Well, could there be any possible question about it?
Well, I think Justice Marshall raised one, whether or not.
Well, do you raise a question?
I suggest that a custom search must be reasonable. I think that that at least must be a standard. I think that
the customs. Well, are you aware that they sometimes take a suitcase and take the lining out? First they take the contents out, then they tear the lining out,
Oh, I think great latitude is given, but nonetheless, there could be such a thing as an unreasonable custom search. That's all I'm suggesting. And I'm not suggesting in this court that the search of the table at the O'Hare Customs Depot was such an unreasonable search.
And let us with a person, they sometimes take the people into a private area and have a physician or a nurse strip them and examine them. Can there be any question about the right of customs to check everything they want to check?
Well, once again, you're asking me to go into hypotheticals, but
yes.
I suggest that there may be a Roshan versus California situation at the Customs Depot someday that could be so extreme that it would offend this court. On the other hand, I'm aware that there are far, far greater latitude given to customs agents than in any other search that I know of. I agree with the court on that basis.
Well, could I return to a question I asked you a while ago? And this won't be a hypothetical. I take it that there was a hashish found in the table at the police station.
That is correct. That is the evidence that was elicited.
And is it a fair inference from the record that the hashish was either placed in the table in your client's house, or it was? Or what was found in the table, whatever was taken, might have been taken out, was there before it got there?
Oh, it's quite possible that the
possible? I mean, aren't there only two alternatives as to where that hashish came from? It was either added in his house, or it was there before it got there.
Before the customs search. Correct. Because customs found that hashish at the airport.
So suppose it had never been out of anybody's sight. And suppose a friend of your client's, friend of your client's went in the house with him, and he just happened to be an informant for the police. So it was always under observation. He testifies that nothing was taken out or put in, and then it was searched at the police station.
Then I agree.
Then you would have known that. Then you might be in.
Then we are
trouble.
In an extremely different case than we are
but
today.
But all that would then show is that the hashish was in there when it was delivered to him, and was never taken out. That's all it would show.
Yes.
Now, on the facts of this case, it seems to me that you are stuck with the unquestionable fact that the hashish was either put there by him in the house, or it was there when it was delivered.
Well, the question, though, I believe, is whether at the time he walked out of that door into the hallway with a closed, opaque container, that at that point the police agents who seized the package had a right to search it under Chadwick. Because at that point, did they have such certainty? First of all, did they have such close control as the cases require for them to say that this is nothing more than a continuation of our earlier custom search, or this is nothing more than a reassertion of immediate control versus surveillance control?
Well, you certainly want to cut off a so-called controlled search, a controlled surveillance rationale. You just want to put that aside and say that this expectation of privacy takes over as soon as the door closes, and that's the end of the case.
Well, I do for the following reasons. Because
Why would you say that you would lose the case if a friend was there with him and later testified that they never touched the table? Because as soon as the door closed, there was an expectation of privacy that the police should not.
I'm sorry if I misunderstood your hypothetical, but I assumed that this friend was continuing the surveillance on behalf of the police.
Well, he was, but nevertheless, the door was closed. And in his house, an expectation of privacy should cut off the entire customs rationale excuse.
Well, the question then for this court would be whether the controlled delivery cases of the courts of appeals should be ratified in this court. I don't think that question has ever been answered, and I think Justice Rehnquist pointed that out in a grant of stay to a California case, that this court has never addressed the problem directly.
Well, let's suppose we do adopt it. Then the question still becomes whether that break in time is sufficient to say that there isn't a controlled delivery.
Your original hypothetical was to me how long a break in time is necessary, and I suggest
that not depend on the nature of the container and the likelihood that it could have been something taken out or added in that interval.
I suggest that if that would be the rationale upon which the lower court or this court should rule, then that should have been developed by the state as a way of showing that this container had to be in the same condition that it always was.
Well, why shouldn't the question be, was there an opportunity for somebody else to put in the table what was later found in the table? Why shouldn't that be the question? If there's going to be if you're going to examine a break, you should examine it from that standpoint.
Well,
because they unquestionably found something later in the table, and if somebody else might have put it there, that's another matter.
Well,
but if you know it's always been in your client's possession.
The question, however, is not whether it's been in my client's possession, but whether the contents of that table are available for search without a warrant.
Your theory is that he it's perfectly conceivable he himself might have taken it out in his house and in the apartment and emerged with the thing just changed at any rate from the way it had been delivered to him.
But I think that's true.
But it wasn't empty. It wasn't empty. It was full when they
took possession. You don't find out until you search.
That's right.
But no one at the time that package was seized outside his door at the time of arrest, no one ever testified that the contents of that container were the same. Nor could they have if you examine the facts, because that was an ordinary shipping container. All you had to do was take the top off, as the customs agent did, take out the contents, put it in.
None of the controlled delivery cases have required absolute certainty. That's just not an argument that's a winner. It's a question of the level of certainty you're going to require. Is it going to be probable cause? Is it going to be substantial likelihood? Is it going to be reasonable certainty? What is it?
Well, I suggest to the court that the controlled delivery cases that I have seen have required such close surveillance that there could be no change in the contents of the package. That's what U.S. v. Berry said. That's what Ford said.
That's almost a chain of possession reasoning, then, like you have.
That's
to
what
have
the courts have searched for in the courts of appeals, and I think it is reasonable.
Why? When you're talking about probable cause, I mean, the whole gist of what you can search in the Fourth Amendment area depends on probable cause. Why should a different standard apply in this one little nook of Fourth Amendment?
Well, I'm not sure that is the standard as I read it in Arkansas versus Sanders, that probable cause by itself does not excuse the warrant requirement. That is the way I read Sanders, and I believe that is what the Illinois court relied on, that probable cause is not a sufficient standard for excusing a law enforcement official from obtaining a warrant, except where there are exigent circumstances, and there were none here. So that I'm not sure that I can agree with that understanding
that really,
of the
you treat this as if it were simply the probable cause, like they had to search the suitcase in Arkansas against Sanders. But here you have the custom search, which demonstrates beyond peradventure of a doubt that at that point there's contraband in the package. And so the question is, what standard of knowledge are you going to require to assume that the package is still in the condition it was in at Customs sometime later? And I don't see why probable cause shouldn't be that standard.
Well, then, of course, we are backing away, I believe, from the standard in Chadwick, which was that probable cause is insufficient.
Well, but certainty wouldn't have been sufficient in Arkansas against Sanders. A warrant was... A certainty without a warrant would have done the officers no good.
Well, my response to that would be that if we then wish to be consistent, if that is the consistency that the court wishes, then we should say that under controlled delivery cases, a warrant is required.
You're free to argue that if you want, sir.
I can only say that I believe that is the logical consistency that I'm confronted with by the decisions in this court, and I suggest that whatever we look to as a standard in this case, the facts of this case, I think I agree with counsel.
May I ask you a question about your theory and the time interval? Do you think there's any relevance to the reason why the police did not apprehend him immediately upon the delivery? As I understand the facts, what they did was they did then take the time to send someone out to get a warrant, and then he unexpectedly emerged from the apartment before they could get the warrant. Is that relevant at all in the analysis?
I think the fact that the officers went to get a warrant once that apartment door was closed indicates to me that those officers, as well as I, knew that they'd lost control at that point and that they need a warrant at that point to reassert control and to research that package.
Well, they hadn't lost control at the time they handed him the package, and he said, it's not too heavy, I can handle it myself, had they?
But they didn't re-seize it at that point.
But apparently the reason they didn't at that time was they decided that it would be better police procedure to get a warrant, and I certainly don't think you'd criticize them for doing that.
No, I don't think I'd criticize them for going to get a warrant. That's what I'm arguing.
As long as the table was in the house, there's no way they could get in the house without a warrant.
No, they could have arrested
him. The warrant they went to get was to search the house.
Well,
and you couldn't enter the house, I guess, without a warrant.
For the purpose of seizing a container within which was another container within which was the object of the warrant.
Suppose they'd waited until he had taken the package out, put it in his automobile, and then started off. Given the background, would you say there was no probable cause for the officers to believe that when he was transporting that package, he was transporting an unlawful drug, and that therefore, if there was no probable cause to believe that they couldn't stop him without a warrant?
I suggest that they could stop the car under case law relating to cars, Carroll, et cetera, and the new cases on that point. I suggest, however, that the probable cause that they would have, even under the most recent cases of this court on the searches of autos, would give them probable cause for a package rather than for the generalized search of the auto. And that it would then need a warrant.
Don't you read our cases as having, recent cases, as having very, very largely expanded what can be searched in the car without a warrant?
I do.
Once the car has been lawfully stopped. So you concede the car would be lawfully stopped on the belief that it was probably transporting drugs. But you say they couldn't open the package without a warrant.
I suggest that even under Ross, the package would be the object of the probable cause rather than the generalized interior of the vehicle. And on that basis, Ross would not authorize a generalized search of car or open of any or all packages or compartments, but would rather require a seizure of the package and a reduction of that package to the immobility and total security of the Chadwick situation and an obtaining of a warrant, as in Chadwick and as in Sanders, which distinguished specifically the Carroll Doctrine from this type of container situation. I suggest that like Chadwick, when John Andreas had a half hour with that package or more alone in his home, and when he came out, that package was seized the same as it was in Chadwick. He stood in the same relative position as the defendants in Chadwick. And like in Chadwick. That package was taken to the police station, reduced to total police control and security. The police had no reason to suspect that that package contained explosives or other dangerous articles. The police had no exigent circumstances. They opened it without a warrant. A warrant was required under both Arkansas versus Sanders and under United States versus Chadwick. And our position is that once Agent Laybeck left the floor of that building, if there were any vestige of surveillance going on, he said he didn't even keep the apartment under his personal surveillance during that half hour. There was no evidence in this case that the package could have had any problem being opened or changed or whatever. There was no certainty at all by that point.
We'll resume there at 1 o'clock. Counsel.
Thank you.
You may continue, counsel.
Thank you. In the remaining moments, I would like once again, if I may, to address the question of Justice O'Connor as to the time lapse, a short time lapse after the closing of the door. I think perhaps a review of the petitioner's reasoning that they urge us to accept relating to the expectation of privacy may help us in this area, and that is the petitioner urges us that there is no expectation of privacy. We have urged that there is, and that the respondent, at the point that he closed the door to his apartment, stood in the same position relative to an expectation of privacy as Mr. Katz did in Katz versus United States when he closed the door to that telephone booth. And the court said in that case that up until the moment that Mr. Katz entered that phone booth, there was no expectation of privacy that he could have in that booth. But when he went in, closed the door, and paid his dime, the government could not enter. And it was at that moment that the government could no longer violate that expectation of privacy. I suggest that John Andreas, at the time he took the closed, opaque container from the government agents and rolled it into the closed door of his own apartment, that at that moment he manifested the expectation of privacy, and that it wouldn't matter from that moment on how long we talk about or whether there's a short time gap or a long time gap, because at that moment, the government does not have control. There is no longer any exception that they can claim to the otherwise always supreme warrant requirement. And on that basis, I hope my answer at least clarifies it, whether or not it is acceptable to all members.
Well, having observed him putting some contraband drugs into the apartment in an identifiable package, and then 30 minutes later seeing him take that same package out, was there reasonable grounds to believe that there might be drugs in the package that he carried out?
I think it's possible to make an argument that there's probable cause at that point, in fact, for believing that there may be some contraband in that package based on earlier knowledge. The Illinois court said that that's a possible argument, but it doesn't apply here because probable cause does not excuse the warrant requirement. As long as there is no controlled delivery in this case, we go back to the standard of Chadwick and Sanders. And in this situation, that standard is that a warrant is required absent exigent circumstances. It is our position that this is not a controlled delivery case. The facts do not demonstrate it. And so to begin to elaborate as to how much control or how little, this purely and simply is not a controlled delivery case. And in that setting, the government or the state of Illinois relies on an improper premise in asking us to excuse the otherwise necessary warrant.
Well, it certainly could fit the definition of a controlled delivery under any view, couldn't it, until the arrival at the apartment?
No, we have alleged that there are two reasons for the loss of control. There's certainly the loss of the control at the door of the apartment, but we have alleged an earlier reason. The state never did establish that on February 22nd, when Agent Laybeck went to the Customs Depot, that he had any direct knowledge of what was inside the package that he told us was closed and opaque at the time he picked it up on February 22nd. So there really is a gap from February 21st at some point during the day up until the search the following evening of the 22nd at the police station.
Don't you think he can rely on what customs officials told him?
There's no evidence that they told him anything. The facts in this case were never brought forward by the prosecution at the trial level to show any communication.
What were they following him for?
I'm sorry.
What were they following him for?
What were they?
You answered Justice O'Connor, said the customs agents never told them they had contraband in there.
The customs agents told the agent Labeck on the 21st, come out to the airport and see the package that we opened. He then tells us he did. He went out, he looked at the package. It was already open. The table was out of the package, and he made a test that confirmed to his satisfaction contraband as part of that shipment. He never repackaged the table. There's never any testimony by either Agent Labeck or Agent Drozek of Customs.
The question is, why are they wasting the time and the manpower to conduct surveillance on this fellow?
Well, perhaps they have what you've already described as probable cause to know what's in that package, but it seems to me that under the cases relating to controlled delivery, more is needed. We cannot just assume that Agent Labeck, at the time he takes the package on the 22nd, has any direct knowledge of what's inside that package without evidence on that point, and none was presented to the court at any time.
This didn't trouble, the point you make did not trouble the Illinois Appellate Court, did it?
Oh, it did. It did. The Illinois Appellate Court related two specific areas where there was a problem, and they suggested that the main one was at the time, the 30 to 45 minutes, but they also, in the opinion, point to the fact that at the time of the initial pickup during the early afternoon hours on the 22nd, Agent Labeck received no communication and therefore had no direct knowledge, and they were troubled by that as well. That is, I believe, in the opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Just like to respond to two points. With regard to the earlier so-called interval in the controlled delivery, the only point really that respondent is making is that Agent Labeck was not present watching the container at the time that the customs agent picked up the tabletop and put it back in. The container was resealed and remained in a customs bonded area from which Agent Labeck picked it up the next morning. He had, as we have noted, seen that tabletop, seen that container the prior day, in fact, tested the substance from the tabletop. To impose the kind of standard of continuity by one individual in law enforcement to justify a controlled delivery, as respondent would in effect remove controlled deliveries. It's a totally absurd standard, I think, is the only way to really characterize it. The second point is that respondent refers to Katz and going into the telephone booth. Well, the man going into the telephone booth did not bring a container with him which had been inspected and which had shown that the contents were contraband. The only reason at all that there was any added factor here by going into the apartment was under Peyton principles. There was nothing about the container or the contents that required the police to go for a warrant. It was the location of that container in the apartment which the police, in exercising professional judgment and acting as we would want them to act, sought a warrant to enter. It had nothing to do with the container, the contents, or anything that might have happened to either the container or the contents. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Barclay.